We've all seen the incredible horse and rider combinations as the backbone of our sport. But what about everything else that makes the equestrian world tick? From the everyday grind to the world-class professional, join the Equestrian Podcast as we talk about every equestrian discipline in a way that hasn't been done before. Now here's your host, rider, trainer, and influencer behind my equestrian style, Bethany Lee.
Hey friends, and welcome to the Equestrian Podcast. I'm your host, Bethany Lee, and this is episode 213. We have two wonderful guests on today, and they are the CEO and head producer of Streamhorse TV, which also recently acquired Equine America magazine. They are on a mission to dramatically increase accessibility to our global horse world with inclusive, sophisticated, and entertaining content. They are making huge waves in the equestrian industry as far as media is concerned and really moving the needle to making equestrian sport more inclusive and more recognized by the general public. So without further ado, I would love to welcome our guests today, CEO Tom Pierce and head producer Nat Mayrath.
Hello, Tom and Nat.
Hi there.
Hey, Bethany.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having us. We're just thrilled to talk with you.
Amazing. Well, let's start it off with Tom. Tell me a little bit about how you found yourself in the horse world.
It's a long, twisted roller coaster type story.
Love
it's interesting. It's actually, you know, being a horse lover is in the blood. My grandmother's grandfather was a horse trainer from Ireland who came here and trained horses for Macy's when they were delivering packages with horses in the 1910s.
Oh, you're kidding. 20s.
Yeah. And legend has it that his horses were the ones that Mr. Macy used to keep. So it's relatively, you know, it's deep in the DNA, I'd say. And I grew up around my mother, who's a fine artist and an equine artist as her passion. And so horses have just always been in our lives, on our walls, and families, you know, family members who competed growing up on the North Shore of Long Island and out in the Hamptons. I was naturally around, you know, the show jumping and the English disciplines. I rode a bit as a kid, and we had a mini horse in the backyard illegally, I think, for a few months. And I'll let my mom tell that story. But so since I was a kid, I've been kind of my mom's business manager in a sense as well, and helping her get her equine art out there and making connections in the world. And then my life went on, and I ended up in finance and wealth management and in startup investing. And at the time where I was like, what am I going to do with my life? This is not what I want to be doing. You know, a cosmic set of events happened, and I decided to leave wealth management to pursue, you know, being my mom's business manager full time in the equine world. We always, you know, involved, you know, artistically, obviously, and philanthropically. And, but my mom's also the female Bob Ross, I like to say.
Yeah.
And, she's amazing on camera. She's an amazing teacher. I would say her art and her teaching skills go, you know, parallel. And so we started a web series. I kind of just did the no safety net leap of faith from finance. And we started creating an online web series called Pierce the Heart Lessons. And obviously we focused on how to draw horses in the early days. And so we've always been around in more of the artistic and creative sense. And then as the pandemic hit, my mom's show launched and it went relatively viral. People were seeking solace and peace and just watching an art lesson, let alone learning how to draw. And we were scheduled to be on television in New York on public television, but people were getting furloughed, and but we were all in on our dream at the same time. And so we were kind of, what are we going to do? And the next day I had an email in my inbox that Streamhorse TV was for sale. And we jumped on the opportunity and bought a media network in the horse world. So it's kind of Hollywood type a story in a sense, but I've always been involved in the arts and the media side of things. And we've been able to formalize that with Streamhorse TV. But that all happened not even 2 years ago.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you were saying that you would let your mom tell the story of your mini. I actually need her on. Like, she sounds so incredible.
Please. Oh, yeah.
She is just lovely. Love she's the best storyteller and the best voice.
Yeah.
How did you go from purchasing Streamhorse TV, mm-hmm. you know, with your background, obviously Streamhorse is like a whole other beast. What was that transition like for you?
It was depending on what part of my life you're looking at, in that immediate moment, we were, you know, essentially, you know, in the independent entertainment world, at the moment. And so I'm big on and have always been, you know, a student of what's going on in mainstream media and the, you know, rise and fall of television and the rise of podcasting and the internet and what the internet just does for everybody. And I've always seen that kind of a glaring hole in that world here in the equine industry as someone who was trying to sell my mom's art on Instagram and advertise, you know, in the publications. And so in that moment, I was really ready. I think we were ready for it, honestly. But if you look 3 years ago, it was not something that was even on the radar. So Streamhorse TV has been around since 2014. It was founded by a pair of show jumpers who had a great idea to create a TV guide of sorts for the English live stream events, you know, that the FEI puts out, and Clip My Horse and Horse and Country. And I immediately saw the opportunity to rebrand at least the TV guide to be all encompassing for the horse world. Is a glaringly another glaring pain point in the industry is it's extremely siloed. And while engaged and full of amazing people doing amazing things, there's geographical and regional silos, there's sport silos, but everyone is on a horse and everyone loves horses. Mm-hmm. And so I saw the opportunity to rebrand the company to be all encompassing. And there's amazing sports overseas that we're helping bring to the States here, like horseball, which is like basketball on horseback, and rugby.
Yeah.
Polo, cross. I left riding to play lacrosse and golf and football. And I wish polo cross was on Long Island because I would have stayed riding and playing lacrosse on horseback. That's huge in Australia and South Africa. Yeah, there's so many amazing sports that I was like, all right, the world should know about a bit more. And then when we first met, I want to thank you for being one of the first people to ever take a phone call from me.
I want to hear this.
As some random dude who just bought this company. You know, when we met, I was just getting a blog started. Just a diverse blog. I wanted all of the top writers and personalities in the industry to found the kind of diverse original content that I had dreams for the platform. And so thank you, A, for being a part of that.
Of course.
It was awesome. And within a week of that, our producer for Mom's Show said, hey, I have a friend who just had a baby and she's looking to do something new. And she's a great producer and writer. And she's interested in writing for you. I know you're talking to a bunch of writers at the moment. And that is Natalie. And Natalie, after two phone calls, became a true partner of ours and a director of content and changed the game for all of us here as we got into, that was at the end of 2020. So, and then 2021 is really when we've made our mark. And a lot of that has to do with Natalie. So kind of a cosmic chain of events.
Wow. What an incredible start. So Natalie, tell me a little bit about your start in the equestrian world and how it got you to where you are right now.
So I was thinking back, my start in the equestrian world really began on the backside of Churchill Downs with my grandfather. And a lot of people who love racing have a story like this. And we actually have a very special project that we started recording at the Breeders' Cup. A lot of people have a family connection to why they love racing. And a lot of that ties into why they're connected with horses. And mine is just as such. my grandfather was one of those old world, true racing fans of the old guard. He got to pet Man O' War as a child. Wow. He used to talk about that, but he lived in Louisville. I grew up in Texas, but my mother grew up in Louisville and my grandparents always had me there in the summers. And so he'd take me to the backside at sunrise and you get that, you know, misty morning fog and the sun coming up and the horses working. And even if you aren't like a little girl who is primed to love horses, you probably are just infected with that scene once you witness it. And so,
yeah, just like I literally have chills.
Yeah, it's just the special thing that many lovers of the sport will tell you is the just the soul of it. And so, and I've said this before, my people used to joke in our family, like, oh, my grandfather's always going to the races. And it's funny, like he's going to go gamble and stuff, but he loved horses. And I spoke at his funeral and spoke about Citation, his favorite horse, racing's first millionaire, and quoted Laura Hillenbrand in Seabiscuit when she has that incredible quote about the horse is nature's most perfect machine. He really loved horses. My mother rode Morgan horses growing up. And so I took basically that summer experience and went back to Texas and demanded to ride and have my own horses eventually.
Sure.
To his kind of muttering like, oh, don't do it. But it was really his fault. So, you know, and it's once you get into it, once you're hooked, it's like a drug.
Absolutely.
So I went back and went to riding camp and got into riding lessons and worked with a wonderful woman called Lois Drury, who I always give a shout out to. She's like a second mother, an extraordinary horsewoman. She trained us up in hunters and jumpers, but mostly focusing on eventing. And so I did the eventing circuit in Area 5, mostly Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Arkansas, I think is the region.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Area 5, good old Area 5. Some big names came out of Area 5. And I wasn't one of them. but
for other things,
yes,
come on.
Yes, Clark Montgomery. Anyway, and I'm one of my best friends, my dear friends. I'll give her a shout out. Claire Mansman is now in Virginia, still doing horses with her lovely eventing husband, Tom Mansman of Pacific Farms. And they're fantastic. And I've always kind of had a connection with her to not really still ride, but to keep telling me about her experiences. She was the one, you'll love this, that got her parents to let her like not go to school anymore and just ride.
Oh, yeah. That's the ideal situation.
Yes, exactly. I was more on I think I'm in the more like the big piece of the pie chart where I ended up going to University of Texas. I grew up in Dallas, went to UT Austin, and I had been doing the, you know, 3-day horse trials up till then. And then going to college was kind of when my two event horses got sold, and it was such a wonderful run. And it was just my favorite place to be was always the barn and the shows. And my first event horse was an Anglo-Arab. And we rode a bit with Karen O'Connor, who happens to have a thing for tiny little horses that turn on a dime and can jump anything from a standstill. And my horse was that. So she actually had jumped on him a little bit at clinics and stuff. And it was a blast because he was the stubborn little thing, but athletic as heck. And then I had an off-track thoroughbred that was big and quiet and lovely. And anyway, I went to the big city. I moved to New York after college to pursue a journalism career, which is one of my other intense passions, and have been in Manhattan for 17 years, not really around horses, except for racing, which then has been my tie back to keep the fix going. Yeah. And without rambling on and on, my grandparents, my entire life would clip the Louisville Courier Journal in spring racing season when it's 3-year-old, like derby lead up. And so because I'm maybe a bit of a hoarder, I have a lot of those still. They would literally...
You, at least you're accepting it, you know?
Yes. Yes, I accept it. yes, I've seen worse, but I just always have appreciated, they kept me in the game, if you will, with racing, and they loyally would send me all the clippings, whether I was in college and going to parties and not really paying attention until Derby Day, or whether I was like in a groove where I wanted to know every horse and handicap the whole race. And so I had a lifelong connection with them, and I still have boxes and boxes. I'm going back into the hoarder thing, but I have all their Derby glasses back to my grandmother's parents, who had a box dating back to like the 1930s. I think I have Derby glasses from almost every Derby. So I'm keeping those.
Wow. That's so special. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about your journalism experience.
Yes. So I came up to New York to do a couple of internships during college. Big city, went to live in the NYU dorms, did summer school up here. I always wanted to live in New York. I always wanted to be in broadcast journalism. That was just always going to be a thing. And so I ended up at MTV News and Documentaries. And when I started at MTV, it was back in the glory days, and they had a real news team and a real newsroom. But the difference was that they didn't have any rules. And they didn't really have anybody holding them back. And so it was like this free news environment for young people, which was fantastic. I worked in the news and live shows, some of the big awards shows. And then I got heavily into the documentary side at MTV. And I produced, shot, and directed a show called True Life for about 12 years. And that took me on the road following all different young people going through all different things, and really made me fall in love with the documentary style and the sort of longer format storytelling. From there, I worked on a feature doc about 5 Olympic athletes. To my chagrin, none of them were equestrian athletes. I tried to fight for that. But we followed them all over the world to capture their qualifiers for Rio. And the stories were all, you know, as with Olympians, all built in, you know, they're all trying to make it to Rio in their respective sports.
Yeah.
That was just a wonderful experience, directed by a former MTV colleague. And then I produced a show about women in media for New York City's television channel. And then Yahoo Finance hired me to do women's content, family content. And that's where I really went more into the digital realm of things. But I was really bringing longer format doc style storytelling to them. So I've always had the horse background. And then as Tom said, my old MTV colleague connected me with Tom. And I didn't ever really plan on there being a perfect marriage of my passions, but this is really it.
So cool. I know that. I feel like hearing your story previously, we have so many things in common where, you know, like went to college. Like I always knew that horses would somehow be in my life, but I didn't know how. I took a break during school, went into fashion in LA, realized I needed to go back to the horses.
Yes.
And was able to combine, you know, like fashion and photography and lifestyle with equestrian sport. And it's just cool how it kind of comes full circle. And it did that for both of
us. Yes. And the horses find you, don't you think so?
Really? Yeah.
And the horse people just uncover themselves out of the woodwork. I'm really involved in the yoga community here in New York. And it's funny. I find people I gravitate toward and I don't know for months or even years. And then it's like, oh, you're a horse person. That's why we love each other.
Yep. Yeah. It's like magnets, I always say.
It is. It's like magnets.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Before we get in a word from our sponsor, I want to talk about them for a little bit because I have worked with and worn Tucker Tweed equestrian products for a while now, and I love them. The quality leather is
amazing, and I'm always wearing their Wellington wristlet and their backpack. The products are stunning. If you are familiar with Tucker Tweed Equestrian, then you most likely know and have seen how often they promote their retail partners. With the cancellation of a number of nationwide horse shows, many retail partners are missing out on key opportunities to see and service their clients. So, to support their partner tack stores, Tucker Tweed is encouraging you to shop tack store websites during those missed horse show dates or purchase through Tucker Tweed directly, but then make sure to tag the respective tack stores in the order notes. This way, we can all support tack stores, and each tack store receives credit for any purchases made. Thank you so much for that reminder, Jill Tweedy, founder of Tucker Tweed. You are amazing, Jill. Thank you for everything that you're doing. Okay, let's get back to the episode.
I know that Stream Horse TV is obviously I feel like it's grown a lot over, you know, since it's been under your care. I know your mission is to build an inclusive community where horse enthusiasts can join together to expand their horizons in equine sports and culture. So tell me a little bit, Tom, about what kind of things you have been working on in order to kind of accomplish that mission and, you know, kind of celebrate the horse as the common thread that, you know, we were just talking about, what that kind of got us today, you know, with Stream Horse TV.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so that mission was in my brain right when I acquired the company. So I immediately had to make, you know, the business match the mission. And so we did that initially just by making the TV guide, you know, including rodeo, including polo, including racing. And so our main product matched our mission. But in that moment, I had dreams for original content and, you know, video especially, and written. All digital, but, and so we started making partnerships, and that was, you know, to Natalie's point that she just so greatly made at the end there, where I just horse lovers connect. I don't consider myself an equestrian in a sense, but I love horses, and I think those people naturally connect. And so we started building partnerships with the major charitable organizations in every industry. And so at the foundation of our business, and even in our organization structure to come, is a well-diversified charitable partnership network where people are saving horses and humans, and horses are saving humans. And so, and those organizations are really, you know, appealing and working for the average horse lover, not industry specific, you know, mostly. And then when Natalie joined us, we started putting out, you know, real original content that was, you know, a diversified, you know, from an industry and sport perspective, and finding common threads, not only the horse, but also, Natalie, if you can talk about the off-the-track thoroughbreds, too, that end up in every sport, in every discipline, and finding these universal threads to tell these stories. And at the heart of what we are, we're storytellers. Obviously, Natalie's background is highly experienced in the storytelling, and mine is relatively new, but it's a matter of getting these stories out there for everybody.
Yes, for sure.
In a way, yeah.
I think that I've said this before. One thing that kind of crystallized quickly for me was that we have the ear of the sport horse community that takes a lot of horses into their second jobs, often when they're really young. And secondly, we have a huge opportunity to continue the big wave of mainstream, you know, humans recognizing the healing power and transformative power of horses, and the fact that they can be used for healing specifically through programs, which we have done a lot with the incredible Linda Tellington Jones, who was onto this like 4 decades ago. But it really is the past, what would you say, Bethany, like 10 to 20 years, it's really gained steam. And so I think there's a tremendous opportunity to bridge those worlds, because it aligns with our mission anyway of breaking down silos and bringing everyone together. And what better than bringing the retirees you know, more closely together with all the people who do different sports who want to embrace them and want the racing world to connect and send them there. And then, you know, with the assisted equine therapy programs, it's the sky's the limit, right? And then I know Bethany and I, thirdly, were talking about this the other day, right? The potential for reality type storytelling in horse world, which is just incredible.
I would say, yeah, I would say we're, our mission, you know, part of it also is to bring mainstream storytelling and, you know, mainstream sports and pop culture type structure and storytelling to the horse world and targeted specifically.
But Bethany, we were talking, right, about like the fact that just even in daily walk of life, being involved in the equestrian world, there are so many behind the scenes things and storylines and just,
gosh.
It's.
Yeah. Well, and so many things that it's like, obviously with the prevalence of like what you were saying, like reality-based television just for like sheer entertainment, which obviously there'd be a secondary benefit of just overall exposure for our sport. But just, I mean, we are in one of the, I would argue one of the craziest bubbles as far as like an overall sport and lifestyle. And even just like the crazy world of Wellington, Florida, and like that circuit, and even within polo and dressage and hunter jumper, like there's just, it's just a crazy world. And a lot of people call it, as you know, like Disneyland for equestrians, but there can be so much drama and like craziness and things that I don't think people really know, even within the industry, let alone outside of the industry, that would be so cool to kind of reveal and showcase a little bit. And overall, with the idea of making the equestrian industry more publicly known, and even if it's entertainment, I feel like that's such a great start. But I mean, what I feel like a lot of guests that I've talked to on the podcast, I mean, such a big part in order to move the needle of the industry is really being able to get it more public
accessibility. Do you feel right now?
No, the bottom of the industry, it's becoming and finances, that being able to create this exposure is going to be completely vital to keep the sport alive.
You just used one of our big words that we use constantly, which is accessibility. And we had Patty Colbert, who created the Extreme Mustang Makeover on our Trailblazing Horsewomen last year, which we're having another one this March. Trailblazing Horsewomen will be the racing edition this March.
Amazing.
But Pat especially, little girls love horses, little girls and little boys, but people love horses and you're not going to stop them. But she has all the research behind her, and she was talking about the fact that it's actually not necessarily money. When they did some research, it's accessibility. It's feeling welcome. And we definitely want to be a platform that advocates and promotes that welcome environment.
Totally.
And again, it goes along with, you know, our base mission, but for people to be able to be part of it, it's only going to grow. The industry for the
Absolutely.
Better.
Absolutely. And Tom, I know when you were talking about how you were like, I don't really like consider myself an equestrian, like I'm a horse lover. I would argue you are an equestrian. And because I really think if we look and kind of take a step back from what it means to be an equestrian, I really feel like it's like your mission, that common thread of loving the horse. And I think the more and more we can include people, just random people that are watching things like Stream Horse TV that kind of either develop this love or had this love when they were a little kid and kind of find the love again, that they can also consider themselves equestrians. And just because, I mean, the reality of our sport is where it's at right now, the accessibility and the, you know, the financial component to our sport, there are only a small percentage of people who will be riders or top riders, or, you know, in that sense. And I don't feel like they should be the only ones considered equestrians.
Yeah, very well said.
Let me throw a question back, Bethany. How do you feel being in the middle of that circus, that Disneyland?
That is a good question. I would say for me, it's been very interesting because I feel like naturally I tend to like feel like a little bit of a misfit sometimes in that world. I grew up, you know, if I was lucky, showing maybe 4 or 5 times a year, very, you know, locally in the kind of Wisconsin, Illinois area, and never made it to Wellington as a kid. Honestly, I don't even think it was really that much on my radar. I, you know, still really, you know, enjoyed what I did as a rider. Never really had any thoughts about being a trainer when I was older or doing anything at the professional level within the industry. I just knew this was going to be a part of my life in some shape or form. So then going, you know, several years forward, getting a position as a private trainer for a few top riders in the hunter jumper world, it has obviously I've been able to be a part of amazing venues like Wellington. And it's definitely interesting. There, you have to be, what I've learned, kind of be confident in yourself and what you do and what you have to offer. And for me, while I am a trainer for some top junior hunter riders and a top adult rider, I am not the best rider ever. I'm not the best trainer in the world. And I had to kind of figure out how to be secure in that, that's not my main identity, and that I've been able to find a way to be a leader in the industry as not a rider and a trainer, where growing up, I felt that that was my only in the industry, right? It was to be like a rider or a trainer. So then finding my identity and finding, you know, something that I felt really confident and at the top of my game in was doing, you know, content creation and really showcasing the equestrian lifestyle through my equestrian style. And then later on, showing my, you know, expert level status by interviewing top riders and trainers in the equestrian world and kind of bringing, you know, conversations like this to light. And so I think it took some time where Wellington, it can be really easy for you to get kind of like caught up in, you know, like who's the best rider, who's the best trainer, you know, kind of this like constant race of like no days off and just like working and doing the grind. I think that I've been able to really find a way to feel that confidence in myself where I'm okay that I, you know, if I never jump into the show ring again as a professional rider, I might drop down to amateur status down the road so that I can, you know, buy some young horses and do the amateur game. But right now as a professional, I'm good with that. I don't feel where before I was like, oh man, like I got to get back in the ring again to like show my worth that I'm like, you know, I have to prove something. And I've just been able to be really content with where I'm at in my riding and training. But I think a big part of that is that since I've kind of found a way to be top in the industry in a different way, and that's through media. So that's in a nutshell, that's how I feel, kind of my thoughts on Wellington.
And we think you're doing a fantastic job and all of the above.
Thank you.
You're going, girl, on the media for sure, and content creation. And I'll have to save this for when Bethany comes onto Stream Horse TV more, but I'd love to hear more about like things you've witnessed in terms of whether people really can't hack it and have to get out of there, because it can be very cutthroat, I'm
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. It's a bit, and I've said this to so many people, like whoever can make Wellington season into some sort of docuseries or reality based TV, like it's gold. Like someone needs to do it. I know there's whispers around, and I think there were a little bit more before COVID, but yeah, someone needs to do that, because that is like a viral like Netflix docuseries mm-hmm. waiting to happen.
It's its own universe for mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah, I would say, Bethany, to your point, you know, you're joking. Yeah, both joking, you know, as that, you know, I'm a horse lover, not an equestrian, but I am an equestrian. It's funny. It's just, it's immediate in my brain because I get on a Zoom yesterday with our attorneys. We have some really cool stuff happening over here that will disclose another date, but it was a new group of attorneys, you know, who I was seeing. And then they all joked, like, you don't look like an equestrian, Tom. I have a flap rim on and a hoodie and the hood's up. And, and I was like, well, that's kind of our point is that, you know, there's horse lovers, there's horse people, and to the outside of the industry, horse people can, depending on where you are in the country or the world, carries different connotations, especially where I grew up, where it was felt very inaccessible, you know, and it's a matter of even aesthetically long driveways, you know, to big mansions where the horses are, the big barns. The average person doesn't feel they can just pull up that driveway and see the horses. So A, they should start doing that. But B, with what we're talking about, you know, in the end, the summary is that media, we're using digital media, free digital content to increase accessibility so that the person who loves horses, like you said, that they loved them as a kid, they forgot about them, and then you found them as an adult, or, you know, a little girl who doesn't have horses, or it's not even in the family's budget, but she can find our content and get her horse fixed that way, her and boys and girls and everyone loves horses, everyone in some form or fashion, and they're in our DNA. And so that's essentially what we're doing, is to fight that stigma and to increase accessibility and grow what is already a huge and thriving industry.
Right. And what an amazing opportunity you have with Stream Horse to be potentially that little girl's only exposure to equestrian sport. And I think that that's okay. And so, like what you were saying, I think this mission of being able to celebrate equestrians in all shapes and forms. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you get to be such an amazing part of that for people is really incredible.
Oh, thanks.
So tell me a little bit, Nat, walk me through, if someone is to go on Stream Horse TV, what can they find?
They can find on our homepage a carousel. That's the first and foremost, that will have most recent stories. What we've been launching the past year have been what I like to call series, but they're written columns with a video element. Sure. So in our shows section, what to watch, there are different sections for each series we have. And we have an equine business series. We have a racehorse retirement series, which is really about pinning down connections in the racing world, whether it's a breeding connection, a training connection, et cetera, with a horse or horses, and them walking us through how they do advanced planning for the rest of their horses' lives. And the ones who do it well, we want to find and speak with so that they can impart their knowledge and tips to the rest of the community. That's a big one that we launched last year. And then we also have a mini documentary series called Retraining Goals that I'd love to tap more into your world with, that is a follow along with A Horse and Rider, with 4 to 5 episodes for each horse and rider starting a horse in a new career. They don't have to be thoroughbreds necessarily, but right now we have the Retired Racehorse Project sponsoring this show. So we have been covering thoroughbreds, and it's been really, really interesting that every single person unprompted that we speak with says, we want to break the stigma surrounding this breed. Yeah. And then our TV guide page is, so there are a lot of shows on the other shows on the shows section. Our second Trailblazing Horsewomen is coming up this March. And the first one is available on the replay under the shows section. And then we have our entire written blog section where you can find all of our articles that span across horse sports. We want to include all breeds. So anyone out there who isn't seeing their breed, and I've had people contact me already, but please write us, tell us about your breed, tell us your stories. If you're retraining a horse in something new that might be a retired racehorse and you want your story to be told, we are open for suggestions and submissions, and we love to talk with new people as much as we can. And then I would just add that our TV guide section, which was the original identity, if you will, of the platform, is still up and going and alive, and it's great. And as Tom mentioned, it now includes all global horse sport live streams. So it is a one-stop shop where you can find any horse sport live stream, and we provide all of those for free. They're live streamed across different channels, but you can find them all in one place there. And we hope to do more, again, with multi-breeds, Western world, sports people don't know about, et cetera. But check out our shows page, I'd say, and our blog page for sure.
Amazing. And Tom, I hear there is new news about a little acquisition. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. Second acquisition in 2 years for the team. Equine America magazine, which has been a longstanding, amazing publication.
Yeah.
In the sport horse world, and another cosmic fall into our lap scenario. And we're really excited about the ability to expand its breadth and depth and awareness, you know, by way of just Stream Horse's, you know, additional oomph behind it, but also, you know, expanding on the storytelling there and its mission, founded by a wonderful woman, Karina Roselli, who is a disabled veteran. So there's a really amazing embedded mission for, you know, using horses, you know, as equine therapy for veterans and para dressage and all the sport horse, you know, disciplines. We're really excited about that. So we're just finishing up that transition, and we have some really great stuff coming in the very near future with Equine America. So
exciting.
Equine America, just summing it up, is a beautiful, beautiful publication that in its former life was a gorgeous print publication, which Bethany, I'm sure you saw at all the VIP tents, at all the biggest shows. And aside from being aesthetically just beautiful, and I was a fan before, and Karina, who owned it previously, was a harmonious partner of ours because we really shared these common values of quality over quantity, evergreen storytelling, really telling background stories rather than just putting up content constantly. But I want to say, because it really serves probably your audience, and your audience has probably seen the magazine before, it's what's really awesome about it, aside from the aesthetic, is that it has a very crystal clear focus on four disciplines. So hunters and jumpers, dressage, para dressage, and eventing. It's English riding disciplines. It's all American sports. They focus on the USA. And so it's a real tribute. So if you haven't checked it out, I will say, unabashedly, like, it is one of the most beautiful websites you'll ever see. And I don't say that because we built it ourselves.
No. Yeah. Stunning. That's so exciting. I think that will be such a great addition to Stream Horse. And yeah, I feel like that was such a exciting little bit of news that just happened.
Yes. And I think it's going to be great because we worked so well before. We're going to still have the same contributors, but we're going to add maybe a little bit of video flair. And we need to get down to Wellington, apparently.
Yeah, you do. There's content to be made, that's for sure. So tell me, Tom, first, an area of this industry that you're super passionate about, that you feel like the rest of the equestrian industry either just doesn't know a lot about or doesn't talk that much about.
Well, I already spoke about the two sports that
get me
going with in horseball and polo cross. So we're really, there's a lot of equestrians and horse people here in the States that have never heard of it either. Mm-hmm. So that is something I'm really stoked about. And there's a few others even that are played here in the States and in Europe that just don't get much attention. And, but, you know, really at the foundation of this all is, you know, the work that's being done by our partners on the charitable side in rescuing the horses sanctuary, preservation of wild horses, but and the retraining. And then what specifically hits home is using horses for psychotherapy and emotional wellness. And that I grew up around those programs in a way, along with the riding and jumping. And so that's always been innately in our mission, that we want to help spread those awarenesses just as much as our own personal.
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel like that's so important. Nat, what would you say for you, an area of the industry that you really love that you feel like you'd want to shed some light on that either people just don't know a lot about or don't talk that much about?
We partner a lot with, we mentioned, you know, all the second careers and retraining, but we partner a lot with the Thoroughbred Retirement mm-hmm. Foundation, and we co-stream their shows. They do groundbreaking work for horses that cannot pursue an athletic career after racing. And so those, a lot of those go in the giveaway category, yeah. You know, there's nowhere for them to go. Unless they, of course, find a, now, you know, you've got a lot more therapy programs that can take horses like mm-hmm. that we call pasture sound, right? But I will mention and throw out there that the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, as nearby for y'all as Ocala and across the country in Lexington and California and in other places, has a program called Second Chances, where if a prison has land that can serve horses or hold house horses, they can have a program where the inmates get to work with horses to learn skills to get back out into the real world when they get out. And this program is incredible. I don't get a kickback for plugging it. It's just once you know about it and really learn how it works, you kind of can't let it go, because they're basically doing the whole horses saving humans thing. Mm-hmm. And they're saving horses because these are the horses that can't be athletes, but they now have a job.
Right.
And their job is literally to transform lives that are broken and shattered, and people who don't think they have anywhere or anything to do or anywhere to be. Mm-hmm. So it is really, I would invite everyone, they're on our show's page as well. I would invite everyone to check it out. And there is a VIP visitor offering that's possible for the Ocala Women's Program, which is just incredible. And the Women's Program video is now on our show's page, but it's really awesome stuff. And I think that type of dynamic business model is something that isn't discussed much because it's groundbreaking, you know?
So really, yeah, it's something that I think so many people think horses are a mode to accomplish your riding desires or goals. And the reality of it is they are so much more than that. They're even extremely beneficial. If we're still being selfish and thinking what we can get out of them, they're still so beneficial to be a part of our lives, you know, and be completely not ridden, but just the emotional and the mental component and benefit that they offer us. I know for instance, I have a nephew who is autistic, and for a minute during his therapy, he did all horse therapy. And for a while when he still wasn't speaking, he literally went through this phase where he only talked when he was on a horse, which is just like, wow. How powerful is that?
Now I have chills.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, I just think that they're so amazing and so incredible. So definitely highlighting those areas like, you know, horses, you know, towards the end of their life and proper retirement, proper rescuing, and even just for horse owners, having a system where you keep tabs of your horses after maybe they're not the best fit for you anymore, or you're looking to retire them somewhere, just being able to keep tabs on those horses so that they don't end up in a situation that they shouldn't be in. And I think continuing to highlight that as well as just the amazing benefit of horses in our lives in any shape or form is absolutely just so incredible and so healing.
Absolutely. And this just popped into my head, but if you haven't seen the Trailblazing Horsewomen replay from last March from International Women's Day 2021, Anne Kursinski, bless her, and Linda Tellington Jones, bless her, start talking about how Linda came to work on Anne's horses in maybe around the 1988 Olympics or something like that. And just Anne's going wild about like Linda's transformative effect on her horse, who went from like a psycho who wouldn't do the second round to like seemed like he was tranquilized, but really he wasn't. It was just that Linda like looked at him. And that's one of my favorite things to offer y'all. If you haven't seen it, it's a pretty good exchange. Yeah. But I'll add that Anne goes into her whole story of abuse. But she really does say that going into her horse's stall and talking to her horse was her therapy. Mm-hmm. And so that actually, before she had real therapy as an adult, like that was her therapy. And we see this so much. And I just was remembering, Bethany, did you ever read the book Beauty?
Yes.
By Bill Wallace.
So good.
That book probably changed my life. I just didn't know it because I was too young. But that's the type of thing that is so powerful. Mm-hmm. And then you have, you know, this five-time Olympian talking about it, basically the same thing. So that's another really, that was a special moment hearing her talk about that.
Oh, that's so cool. And I think, yeah, the more that we can highlight stories like that is just going to, you know, continue to move the needle in our industry. And I think that's where, you know, Stream Horse TV is going to be, you know, and has already been such a big part of that. So Tom, Nat, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the podcast and hearing a little bit about your stories and what you're doing with Stream Horse TV and now Equine America. I appreciate you taking the time and I wish you both all the best.
Thanks, Bethany. You're the best. Thanks for having us. We were very excited.
Thank you so much, Bethany. We hope we'll see you soon.
All right, that is all I have for you today. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you liked what you heard, please take a minute and write a review on iTunes. I would so appreciate it. It helps people like you find the podcast, and it helps me get some killer guests. Thank you so much, and I will talk to you next week.